You know, we've got a lot of really colorful characters in the marketplace. In the real estate market, there's the grave dancer, Sam the Grave Dancer Zell, who would go in and buy distressed real estate properties. But I'm sitting next to the king of bankruptcy. Wilbur Ross has an incredible reputation going back for decades of identifying companies that are ailing, turning them around, packaging them up. But you probably also know him for the four years he did as the Secretary of Commerce. And Secretary Mills joins us right now. It's good to have you with us.
Good morning, and I'm delighted you can have me on today.
I am too. And pretty soon we're going to know you as a noted author. You've got a book coming out, Risks and Returns, Creating Success in Business and Life. So what prompted that?
Well, what prompted it was once I left government, I wanted to think, what could I do that would be useful to a lot of people? And I thought, I've had a lot of experiences over my life, so I started writing them down with the thought of taking them to illustrate things that could be useful to other people.
And well, you've got a Horatio Alger life. I mean, from a very humble beginning to Yale, to, and now you're a multi-billionaire. You tell everybody how to do that?
Well, it's not quite a how-to book in that sense of the word. But what it is to try to prepare people, instead of going to a safe room when there's some crisis that comes, to face up to it and try to see if there's some opportunity hidden within the crisis. And in my life, there have been a lot of opportunities hidden within crises.
So is that the approach that you would look at companies? Because you go into these ailing companies, I mean, Texaco or Pan Am or whatever, that nobody else wanted to touch, and you see value, I guess, where others don't.
Yes. Well, usually what has happened to get the company into bankruptcy is some combination of overexpansion and overleverage. Most classic example, Federated Department Stores. A big Canadian real estate developer, a shopping center guy called Campo, made a hostile bid for Federated. He paid $6 billion for it, of which 97% was debt. Well, the next time there was a little recession, guess what? Turned out it was easier to collect rent than to pay rent. So he went bankrupt.
There's all sorts of activity we see right now. We don't see the green mailers as they used to be. Our good friend Boone Pickens arguably was a green mailer. He never would have admitted to that. But then now we see the activist investors. Elliott Management is taking a big stake, you know, in North Texas, in Texas Instruments, and now a big fight brewing with Southwest Airlines. I mean, that's a different sort of approach.
Well, it is different in that they're looking to find companies that are somewhat undermanaged and have a different formula. They're not looking at companies that are already bankrupt. Now, Paul Singer, the CEO of Elliott, is a long-term acquaintance and friend, and he does also do bankruptcy.
What do you think he's looking for in this case? I mean, they seem to be on a pretty good roll.
Well, they've had a very, very good long-term record. Like everybody, you make some mistakes, but you need enough that were not mistakes, enough that worked to overcome the ones that didn't go so well.
You know, you mentioned Paul Singer. I mean, he's legendary in our business. But, I mean, you've dealt with some legendary people. I was looking at the list that's in your book, but, you know, King Charles, and we went to heads with Warren Buffett, I think, and won that battle. Carl Icahn, the Rothschild family, Mike Milken. So, Warren Buffett, you guys were both after the same target at some point.
You're talking about Carl Icahn.
Well, that too.
Yeah. Yes, he and I frequently have banded together. I think Carl is one of the great all-time investors, and he's not at all afraid to mix it up with anybody.
And Warren Buffett, you were both going after the same company, as I remember from the book.
In some cases, yes. The most notable one was Burlington Mills, yes, the big textile company, which was in bankruptcy, and Buffett was bidding cash for it. I became the chairman of the Unsecured Creditors Committee, had a lot of the bonds which we bought after the trouble came in, and so we had a little shootout in court. The advantage we had was Buffett was offering cash, so he was playing with 100-cent dollar bills. We were playing with bonds that we bought at 25, 30 cents, but under the rules of bankruptcy, you can count them at par when you make a bid, a so-called credit bid. So we were able to outbid him, and therefore we had the unusual experience in court. I'm testifying before the judge that in this case, people would rather take paper than cash. And that's a very unusual recipe.
But you won it. Not many people can say they beat Warren Buffett. The legacy is quite remarkable. But what I don't find in the book is, I mean, you seem to be agnostic in what you invest in. I mean, we're just talking about a retailer and airlines, and you did enormous roll-ups in the coal industry. So does the industry matter at all?
Yes, it matters quite a bit, and we normally study the industry for quite a little while before we decide to go into it, because companies tend to go bad by industries. Think about it. At one point, all the airlines just about were going bust. At another point, all the big retailers. At another point, the steel companies. So you generally have quite a little bit of warning that there's going to be an industry-wide disaster. And that's what gives you the time to study it, try to understand what is wrong with it and what can you do to fix it. The other reason for going into them when they're in real trouble is since it's usually an industry phenomenon, nothing goes down forever, right, just like nothing goes up forever. So it makes it easier to get your timing right. And if you come into a thing that is fixable and you come in at or near the nadir of its fortunes, then you've got a couple of things going for you independently of whatever sensitivity you can apply.
And so you take that expertise and you take it off to Washington, D.C., because as I was saying in the interview, a lot of people know you primarily as the four-year Secretary of Commerce during the Trump administration. One thing I learned, though, did you first encounter Donald Trump during one of his bankruptcies? It was the casinos in New Jersey.
Yes.
But you were on the other side of the table at the time,
yes,
from him.
Both Carl Icahn and I were on the other side. What happened, Trump was financing the Trump Taj Mahal, a startup casino on the boardwalk in Atlantic City. The bonds went down to 20 cents because they had never paid a coupon. They went into default before the first coupon. So Carl bought them up at a pretty low price. The bondholders in those days, I was just doing advisory, and then the bondholders, including Carl, hired me to deal with Trump. And that was quite an exciting experience. First of all, the bondholders hired me on the Thursday before Labor Day weekend. So Trump called up and he said, you have to come down to Atlantic City tomorrow and we'll start working on the restructuring. Well, the last thing I wanted to do was be in Atlantic City with a bunch of gamblers swarming all over the place on Labor Day weekend. I wanted to be in my house in Southampton, but had to do it. So I went out to the 63rd Street helipad, and there was this gleaming, very polished up helicopter with very large nail polish red letters on the side, T-R-U-M-P. So I certainly knew I was at the right helicopter. About 30 minutes later, we land in Atlantic City, and he's there waiting in his big stretch limo. As I got into the car, I noticed there were two flags on the front bumper. One was a U.S. flag, and the other was a Trump flag. What was especially interesting, it seemed like the Trump flag was a little bigger than the U.S. flag. And given his penchant for showmanship, it's quite likely that that was, my vision was right.
That was a remarkable first encounter, but evidently it was not so entirely unpleasant because you ended up, you know, being in his cabinet for 4 years.
Well, we got to know each other very well during the bankruptcy, and while there was a lot of acrimony, at the end of the day, we made a solution, and that's the story in itself. We had a big press conference in New York, and we made the announcement that we had made a deal between Trump and the bondholders. Big excitement. I was thrilled because this was a very tough tassel. He's a very good negotiator and a very tough, strong personality. So I'm coming out of the session, the news session. I'm in the car about to go home and get some rest, and the phone rings. This is your mother. And she spoke in just about those terms. And I said, oh, hi, Mom. And she said, have you lost all your self-respect? And I said, what are you talking about? And she said, well, after I've been playing Mahjong with my lady friends, and we were watching the TV, and we concluded that after all those mean things he had said about you, you should not have done a deal with him. If instead you had become a lawyer like I always wanted you to, and like your father was, you wouldn't have to hang around with people like that. And then she hung up on me. So that was my family reward.
Well, but it also, I think, points out that through all this process and through all the acrimony associated with these bankruptcies and these ailing companies and all the personalities, you have to be made of Teflon, I guess.
Well, I don't know if it's Teflon, but something that's bulletproof, yes.
Well, look, we wish you great luck with the book. I think there are a lot of people that they're going to be interested in reading it, and we'll quickly go to the index at the back to see if their names are mentioned. Wilbur Ross is the author of Risks and Returns, Creating Success in Business and Life, coming out second week of September.
Yeah,
Mr. Secretary, thank you.
September 10th.
Mr. Secretary, we appreciate the time.
Thank you. Good to talk with you, and I enjoyed being on your show.
Thanks a lot. For more of our conversation, go to krld.com/CEO. I'm David Johnson, News Radio 1080 KRLD.